It's such a pleasure to be here. And I apologize this morning. I was in such a rush. I condensed 3 days' work of material into that hour and 15 minutes this morning. So, you know, it was such a practice in what to leave out. So please, again, thank you for your patience as I was rushing. This afternoon, I'm in very familiar territory in terms of my own ministry, my own service. I work mostly with communities that have a faith base, and I work with them at times of transformation. So I work with them in discerning new leadership. I help communities do long-term planning. In particular, in my own tradition, I work with communities that are looking at joining other communities as sisters diminish. You know, groups have to blend together, or they decide to close shop. I mean, so it's very, very heartfelt and very transformative work. So being among a group of people who are faith-based and from that orientation in that holy center find themselves serving, I'm so happy to be at home with you. I also want to bow to both Vic and to Cynthia for the work that they did, because Vic, you provided a language for the substructure of what I'm going to say. So think of Vic's paradigm, the various stages as I'm speaking with you today. And Cynthia, your images and your heart, thank you. That's my own medium. And to have you in a way till the ground, I'm still quite moved by what you presented. So please, again, thank you. Thank you so much. So let's begin our own sense. Don't you love this sexy title? All right. So, and I love that this is the logo that you chose for this conference. And my own emphasis is going to be on the B. And I love that it's in the circle of hands, huh? Because this is how I grow up. Don't just stand there. Do something. Well, and here's the thing: if one cannot be, what one does really is never effective. Really, in the long term, it doesn't really contribute to transformation. More than not, it's trying to do business as usual, because when we do business as usual, we know what to do. That makes sense. Do you get that? Business as usual, we know what to do. If we are in the mode of transformation and we're in this place we've never been before, we don't know what to do, and that's exactly right. And that's when you must be. So that's the space I'm speaking to this afternoon. And I want to bow to everyone here in this room, because you know this being. You would not be here if you did not have some kind of practice of your own. And that meditation and contemplation is finding its way into the mainstream of the American culture is so heartening. I mean, it's just amazing. Watch the advertisements, watch the way things are talked about, and it's all talking about the fruits of meditation. It's amazing. So there's a subtle shift and transformation happening. I put this picture in because Annie Johnson said there was a contingent from down under. So I wanted to be sure I got the koalas in there. So here it is. This is my intention for this afternoon. I want to speak to and appreciate the practice of transformative contemplative service. Now, you and I, we are in this water together, in this practice of transformative contemplative service. And I want to look at two, in a way, things that we do in our being. In our being, we're incarnating our lineages of profound reverence and deep transformation. And I have such a fresh appreciation for HP. HPB, as Joy Mills always says, HPB, and Colonel Olcott, for their sense of reverence and transformation through the presentation that Cynthia offered, and also our sense of participating. Please excuse my misspelling. They tell me that it's geniuses who can't spell, you know? So, and here it is. You know, I over and over, now that I have some mileage under my belt and I'm no longer an idealistic novice wanting to serve with my sisters, I get it that this work is not about change out there, really. It's about what's changing here. It's about what's changing here. And as this changes, everything else changes. That's what it's about. And Cynthia, again, you spoke to how you understood finally the look in the eyes of those who looked at you, and you were changed. And your telling of that and my seeing you and hearing you, it is working its way into my heart. And I'm feeling myself on shaky ground in terms of what I know, too. So thank you again. So this is how the world changes through us. Now, also, I'm going to lift up a couple of things. I want to look at organizational energetics, because when you provide service, sooner or later, you bump up against organizations, or an organization sent you out in the first place. Right? So organizations. Plus, isn't it this whole campus part of an organization? Well, I am too. It's an organization. So they have their own evolutions, and just like we have that substructure of evolution in the individual understanding, so organizations do the same thing. So now apply Vic's substructure to how an organization evolves. It's remarkable. So Jung, I'm a student of Carl Jung, and so I have that worldview. Organizations have souls, and organizations have psyches, and organizations have a spirit that evolves in the same way as the participants. So I'm going to offer you this picture of my community, and I love it because of the light and the dark. See the shadow and the light? And I can tell you a story of everyone down the line, going down the line of light and dark. And so can you in your organizations. You can do the same thing. All right. And I also will try to offer some ways of working with that dynamic of light and dark, these energetics that are afoot. And I want to offer them so that I can work with that energy in my life, and I can be leaven in my own organization and in my own community and in the world community. All right. Now, I want to say, this is how I think of you, poised to participate. I mean, there isn't a slug here. And all of you are, in a way, your eyes have been trained, habituated to looking for ways to help. This is the most helpful group of people I've been in a long time. And I mean that as a way of lifting up your own sense of yourself in the world. Helpful. Open, ready, poised. And I want to say that we're poised to participate, that our spiritual lives allow us to be poised to participate in relationships, in one-on-one relationships, in our communities, and then ultimately in the planetary community. I want to offer you a poem as you are poised to participate. This poem was sent to my leadership team. In 2000, I was elected as one of the leaders of my community, and one of our members sent us this, and it couldn't have been more true. It is an annunciation. And of course, in every annunciation, when the angel Gabriel shows up, Mary says, "How can this be? Huh? How can this be?" So in a most reverent way, I want to offer you to pay attention to the "how can this be" moments in your own experience, an annunciation. Some of you I will hollow out. I will make you a cave. I will carve you so deep, stars will shine in your darkness. You will be a bowl. You will be the cup in the rock of collecting rain. A bowl. People will eat from you, and their hunger will not weaken them to death. A cup to catch the sacred rain. Light will flow in your hollowing. You will be filled with light. Your bones will shine. The round open center of you will be radiant. I will call you brilliant one. I will call you mine who is wide. I will call you transformed. The round open center of you will be radiant. I will call you transformed. So, transformation. In this place of transformation, what is required is the inspiration of our ancestors. So leaning into HPB, leaning into whoever it was that first introduced you to the Theosophical Society, whoever first opened up the possibility that there was a spiritual depth available for you, leaning into them. Now feel them behind you. I mean, let yourself, in a wonderful, visceral way, let your body feel yourself held. And as you feel the holding of the chair and the hug of gravity, you can dare to ask yourself these transformative questions. This is how things change. What time is it for me? What time is it? What time is it for you? And there's a time for every season, huh? And so one of the most heart-wrenching experiences I have is of my elder sisters who will sit on the edge of their bed and tell me that they're not worth anything anymore. Why doesn't God take them home? Because now they're too old and frail to serve. What time is it? What time is it? What conditions are confronting me? Who and what sustains me now? And what specific characteristics of participation do I have available? I am so aware that when we have community gatherings, we used to have meetings late into the night. We'd actually do work until 9. Now, listen, 70-year-old bodies don't do that. There's the energy of the 20-year-old and the energy of the 7-year-old, and there are specific characteristics for participation then. Do you see where I'm going with this? Okay? And it's all good. That's the amazing thing. It's all good. Beware of the habit to prefer one over the other. Tricky. Tricky. All right, so also want to say this, as you find yourself in conscious participation, contemplative participation, blocks are inevitable. Let me just say that. So let me do a footnote. There's a way in which, if this is really blessed holy work, it all should be easy. Nothing should ever go wrong. And if something goes wrong, I must be doing something wrong. Do you ever feel that? All right, so here's the reality. Blocks are inevitable in an evolving world. It's inevitable. Setback and failure are a matter of course. I mean, this is the text. This is the syllabus, if you will. The growth is, and the learning is, how we manage them, how we enter into them, how we embrace them, how we, may I use this word, how we bless them. That makes sense? It's really, every time there's a failure, a block, a setback, it is an opportunity to stretch into the blessing muscle. Do you see what I mean by that? Right? It isn't what I expected. How can this be? Do you hear it? That's it, right there. So here it is. The antidote to bitterness and anger is softness and compassion. Now, we've heard that in many ways today already, and this really is the Franciscan way to see with softness, to see with compassion, to see through and beyond the hard and the shell and the protection and the armor of bitterness and anger. Yeah? Bitterness and anger protect something. Can we see beyond it to that? All right, so now, a conscious contemplative service perspective. Now, there's nothing like service to build community. And here is the piece that's so significant in the Franciscan world. My own awakening is never for myself. Let me say that. It's never for me. If I think it's all about me, I may as well pack up now and go home. So it is about the building of, or the revelation of, the one. And if it's about how we are all one, how can it just be about me? Right, so it's about this community. So to foster, every time we build community, every time we make a connection, we are in a way incarnating more of the reality that we are one. But we have never before, as a human species, been challenged to do this in a global context. Never before has this been our experience. And this means we have to have conscious tending to relationality and to our energetic emotional life. Watch what happens. Well, you know, I grew up in a German household, so we were German immigrants, and there were a lot of biases that came with that. And I must say, to this day, I have emotional responses. I have a visceral response to conversation about the Holocaust. I have a visceral response to jokes about Polish people. Do you see? We cannot sustain a disconnect from what heretofore had been acceptable. Do you see where I'm going with this? So watch in yourself what comes up as you notice those people, or that country, or that leader, that official. Let me tell you, lots of practice in Wisconsin about that official. And now, what Francis also did in the Roman liturgy, there's this beautiful phrase where the elements of bread and wine are lifted up, and we say, through him, with him, and in him, Christ. Okay? Through him, with him, in him. I want to say, here is what I see as the growing edge. Can we see that it is as holy, bear with me, can we see it's as holy to say, through, with, in the world, equally holy? Can we see that? And that's the cutting edge. That is the litmus test for me for an evolving spiritual practice. So here's the flat world. and where you can actually fall off, so beware and do the right thing. Now, what's happening for us is we are awakening as a species to the systemic wholeness of this, where it goes from, I can't fall, so when the globe was round, we got it that we couldn't fall off. What we're still learning is that participation in the whole is non-optional. What I mean by that is that everything has an effect. And the polar bear knows that. The polar bear adrift on the ice cap. So this is a new kind of consciousness. This is literally a new world that our spirituality is being invited to take into account. In a way, in an overt way, it never had to before. You see, St. Francis never had to worry about global warming. We do. So the spirituality has to be broad enough, hollow enough to hold that. So, and of course, the mess we are in is due to loyalties. So loyalties need to be very carefully questioned and unpacked. And no, the globe is not upside down. I can't tell you how many groups I have shown this picture to, and someone will always say, hey, that's upside down. Once it was even a Cretona, I hate to admit. all right, so this is this idea of wholeness, this idea of systemic wholeness. And I want to say that if the whole is what we are to connect to, the only way to get to whole is by that which transcends the physical, and can bring the physical into integration. So this is soul work. Mystics over and over again will say, our soul is not in our bodies are in our soul. Over and over and over again. You know this from the theosophical perspective as well, right? So this is, we're not talking about fitting things together on a physical or emotional level. We're talking about fitting things together, allowing the reality of our soul connection to manifest and incarnate. Living my life with all my heart, mind, soul, and strength. All right, so here's the question I want to pose for you. Fear of not being good enough keeps me from doing a lot. Huh? All right. So when you're doing soul work, fear of your soul not being good enough, big enough, keeps us from doing a lot. Now, then there's the opposite symptom. Oh my God, I can't believe it's that good. Right? You know, so in the Easter liturgy, we read the Genesis story, and God got through with the world, and God said, it's good. I can't believe that. Have you seen the news lately? But there is a fundamental, essential goodness. Cynthia showed that to us so graphically. Can I believe that that's really me too, you? This person next to me, Marge, before she has her first cup of coffee, Marge, who I live with, huh? So unpacking this is soul work, and this, I mean, it's as simple as this. This will save the world. Can you believe it? This will save the world. All right, so we have a poised lineage that has been trying to tell us that. I mean, the beauty that captures us in the writings of our traditions capture this. Could you start the music, please? It captures who we are. So our teachers say to us, trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string. Trust thyself. Accept the place the divine providence has found for you. Look at this, your contemporaries right here, these beautiful people. The connection of events that conspire to bring you here. Trust, and as Joy Mills said to me before I moved to Wisconsin, trust yourself to life. And I moved, and it's amazing. I have to thank her. But trust yourself, trust life. Trust your lineage. And then there's this. So, trusting lineage. This is my Franciscan lineage. Please let me share this with you for about 5 minutes. This is Francis praying in San Damiano before the crucifix. Asking the crucifix, asking the Christ, having abandoned everything. Do you hear the emptying here? Everything that he had thought would bring him honor, fame, success. Everything his world was built on had collapsed and crashed. He had nothing. What am I to do? I will hollow you out. So here he is praying, and he sees this. The central core of the Franciscan mystical experience is seeing love in the eyes of the one who suffers. That is the central core of the Franciscan mystical experience. That is to say, I can't believe it. You who suffer so much, love me. So, let me say, this is the service position too. The suffering ones you serve, they look at you with love. Who has not had that experience of having done something for someone in a dire, dire situation? They are suffering, and yet they communicate their thanks and appreciation and love to you. This crucified one loves you. This is the Franciscan mystical experience. These eyes looked at Francis. Francis felt himself loved. So this is for Francis the key. God is love. When we feel the eyes of love upon us and are seen and loved, we have experienced God. Follow me with this? See that? So to feel love is to have the visceral experience of the divine. Now, here I mean this love that sees you to the core, huh? Where there is no pretense, no ego. This is the love that we have the opportunity to experience in rare moments when we are open and vulnerable and undefended. It catches us off guard. It changes us. Oh my God. Oh my God. And Cynthia spoke so eloquently of that transformation in herself. So this sense of love. And then Francis ran around Assisi looking at the beggars, looking at the poor people on the street, looking at the lepers, and exhorting to the townspeople, love is not loved. Nobody understands love. Do you see why he would say that? Love is not loved. Nobody understands love. These ones, I have experienced love. Love is not loved. No one understands love. Love is not loved. No one understands love. This is the heart of the Franciscan experience. So when Francis tells the Franciscans to preach the gospel at all times, what Francis is saying, make yourself available to be experienced. All right, so here's the translation. Make the love that you are, this is to say, your essential core is this divine revelation of love. I use the word revelation, I'm going to use a different word in a minute. Make this divine revelation of love available to be experienced. And we cannot be our essential loving self if we do not move through rationality into intuition, because love is not rational. I'm going to say this again. Once you pass through Vic's model and you're on that sense of the rational, where you understand about objectivity and about morality and about ethics, there comes that moment when there is no more choice. There is only the choiceless choice. Exactly in this moment, this requires doing. There's no other choice. Who has not experienced that? Huh? It's intuitive. It is our essential way of connecting. And the word love is way too small for this, huh? Even the word compassion is way too small for this. This is divine interconnection. It's the God in me and the God in you. In intercourse and communion, it changes lives. Life as you knew it before has ended. Did you know that the Greek word for revelation is apocalypse? When you experience this kind of transforming love, it is a divine revelation. It is an apocalypse. It ends your life as you know it. See? So I wish you lots of apocalyptic moments. Oh God, is she really praying that? How can this be? All right, so I want another wonderful little story. Now it's 1224. So 1219, Francis went to visit the Sultan. And this is now 5 years later. And very strangely, there was a thing that happened. He had heard the news that there was going to be a push against his good friend, his brother, the Sultan, a new Christian advance and push against his armies. And he declares a fast. Now, in the Christian tradition, in the medieval Franciscan tradition, it was typical to announce a fast for a particular kind of intercession. So he announced a Lent, so a 40 days of fasting from August 15th to the Feast of St. Michael. Now, what's interesting about this is that it approximates Ramadan, which he knew about from his visit to the Sultan. He went on to the mountain of Laverna, and he had this intention. Now he's coming to the end. He knows he's frail. He knows his life probably won't be long, and so he wants to understand this mystery that first awakened in him, to suffer the suffering of the Christ who loves the world unconditionally, and then he wants to know how that love is possible so that he can heal as Christ healed him. You see that? It's all this mystery of love. He wants to know about love. He wants to know about love. And here's the story. As he's praying about this great love, a six-winged seraph appears to him. So in the Franciscan world, we don't have angels. We have apocalyptic seraphs. Huh? And he saw on that seraph six wings. He saw the figure of the crucified. And once again, this is now a replaying of the initial religious experience he had. He saw this figure looking at him with the most intense love. He felt so loved in that moment that he could do nothing but begin to repeat the praises of God as best as he could remember from his friend the Sufi at the Sultan's camp. He literally, for the first time in Christian literature, does the praises of God in the manner of Islam's 99 names of God. And then lots of other saints have done it after him. This was the first one. So again, how his prayer had been influenced by his friend, or by his visit to this Muslim country. So he is so taken out of himself. And over again, he talks about how this love is divine sweetness and beauty. God, you are good. You are good. You are all good. You are supreme good. You are the most high good. You are all sweetness. You are all delight. You are my life. You are enough for me. This is an amazing prayer he prays, feeling this love. Now, I want to say, having experienced amazing unconditional acceptance from another human being, I know that response. God, Florence, you are so good. You are so amazing. You have loved me with such an unconditional love. Thank you so much, Florence. You see, we know this in our human experience. This is the divine experience of that. And then, in the midst of that rapture, he writes on the other side of the prayer, the blessing of St. Francis. And we have this in the tradition too, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May he turn his face to you and show mercy on you. May the Lord keep you and give you peace. And then he hands the parchment to Brother Leo. And then Brother Leo writes in these lines, the Blessed Father Francis gave me these prayers, and this is a blessing for me, Leo. And he told Leo to keep it, and we actually have the parchment, and you can see where it was folded, because Leo would keep it in the pocket of his habit. Now, on this parchment is this amazing, amazing signature. So this is the way it looks on the parchment. And it's been a puzzlement to scholars for a long time. And now with all the new work that is coming out between the relationship of Islam and the Franciscan visit, some new insights. When you look at this, you can read this, I weep. You can read it without this T in there. The Tau cross is the symbol for Francis. He would sign himself with the Tau cross. You can read it, I weep for you. Or you can read it, just without the T, I weep. Or then, if the T goes in there, it reads, I weep for you. Very interesting. And what has happened is that scholars now believe that this is a portrait of the Sultan. It was very common at this time in medieval Europe to have the dead speak from the grave, and they would have the head of the person with a cross, and then they would put a message from the dead person to the living, and they would have that signature. When you turn this on its side, can you see now here the hat and the beard and the wrapping of an Islamic sultan? Can you see it? So it's very amazing that Francis moved by this incredible divine love, has in mind his good friend, the Sultan. And then, of course, that it's the time of Ramadan and it's the time of the military push, the amazing connection, heart connection between these two men. It's just so moving and powerful to me, the spiritual friendship that these two men had. So now I want to ask you, what is it time for? So what is it time for? As we also experience this mystical love in our life. And I offer you Francis' story, not so much that it should be like this for you. I offer it just to say this kind of experience is possible. Do you see that? It's like this. As a Franciscan, the 10 foolish virgins and the 10 wise virgins in the scripture, the 10 wise ones had oil. When the bridegroom came, they burnt the oil, and then they sent the foolish ones to get their own oil. I thought, why didn't they just share the oil? So here it is. This kind of spiritual experience I'm speaking of, I can only point to it, and that the oil is available. I cannot give you mine. And that's true for all of us. We cannot give the oil of our experience to another, but we can certainly hold each other as we find it together. So it's time for the universe story and the earth story. We've never had this confront us before as a species. There's a time for a spirituality, a practical, functional spirituality that can account for extinction, fragmentation, and increasingly complex collaborative renewal without blaming. Right? Yeah, let me just say. So this is, if something went wrong, probably somebody did wrong, and whose fault is it? And let's fix it so business can go on as usual. Do you hear that? So really, this extinction, this fragmentation, this increasingly complex world, the inhumanity that we were privy to see just an hour ago, this is not about having us fix it so we can get on with it. It's about letting it change us into what we have never yet been. That is transformation. Change us into something we have never yet been. And also to acknowledge that we're in the sixth great Earth extinction. The fifth was 65 million years ago. Huh? Earth has had a number of extinctions, and now we're in another one. And each extinction was like the breaking out of the caterpillar into a new butterfly. Huh? So this is big. This fact that we're in this extinction is big. So let's think about it, and let's integrate it and make something of it in terms of our experience. I'm going to let the music play. And I'm going to let you ask to follow it with your heart as much as you can, to open to its feeling, its yearning.
Thank you.
I am so privileged to have the opportunity to cast my lot with you. Thank you. I was so taken with the word perseverance. When I took first vows, all the sisters lined up and said, "I wish you the grace of perseverance." I had no clue what they were talking about. And actually, what I thought they were talking about was this. This Sisyphean kind of way of perseverance. There is a way in which that we take great pride, and if we push the ball up the hill like Sisyphus, it rolls down, and then we push it up again. See how great we are? Ball rolls down, push it up again. Struggling, working so hard. See how hard I work? See how full my calendar is? See how much I do? Struggling up the hill. Okay. So here's the trick. Can we notice when we're not getting anywhere? That is the spiritual direction question. For what pushing up the hill? And so can we stop, reflect, recognize not failure, but the wisdom of a different way? And this is so hard, particularly in a culture that loves to teach ways to do things. So you get the right way to do it. And then once it works, keep going. But I have to tell you, what might work for you when you're 20 isn't going to work when you're 75. So in a way, life is very gracious that way, it will tell us. And just this morning, one of my sisters, Sister Kenneth, said to me, "You know what I call my cane? I call my cane dearie." I lose dearie a lot. All right, here's the other trap. Urgency. There is nothing as blinding as urgency. It has to be done now, for goodness sake. Right, so this kind of urgency is not the urgency of the choiceless choice. The choiceless choice knows this must be done, and it gets done now, and it's in the flow. Then there's the urgency of spinning your wheels. I gotta get this done. The urgency that is the choiceless choice has no premeditation to it. But boy, do I have premeditation to the urgency of my day. You should have heard me trying to come down here. Urgency. Also, I want to say there's nothing like a theosophist, or for us, a chapter, to bring out urgency. And the blindness that happens, a righteous blindness that happens under urgency. There's a really subtle trap. I want to lift it up. It's an emotion that is literally destructive of relationships. Don't talk to me now. I have to get this done. Have you ever done that, right? This person's right in front of you. My poor Hopkins, my poodle, he's right there. Hopkins, wait, I got to get this done. Now, I use that as a funny example, but there is there's subtlety to this in the diminishment of the quality of our relationships eroded by urgency. All right, so here is the sense of timing. There is a season, accepting of our good effort, good enough, and a satisfactory awareness that we indeed tried and something fresh is called for. Do you know, in the American culture, we're not rewarded to say, "I just don't know. What shall we do? I don't know." We're not rewarded for that. Well, you're the expert. You tell us. Well, so I don't know. So let us sit together in the silence and see what together we can make of this. Do you see how different that is? This is the piece of it. Noticing it's also noticing the times, the situation, the elements against our tide. A personal example, I wanted so much to have an herb garden at the Christine Center, and both the weather and the budget conspired against me this year. And then, of course, this morning when you talked about anger, I thought, oh, do I have a slide to talk about anger. So for me, and as I work with relationality and communities, anger really, and I want to say, it's just a habit, huh? The response, it's the habituated response to disappointment and frustration. Let me say this, people who care so much, because they care so much, are vulnerable to this. The frustration and disappointment. The good that could be but isn't yet, do you hear it? Who can I blame that it isn't yet? Myself included. And then aware of pushing people away to achieve a goal. All right, so now, these again, wonderful words from the Buddha. They criticize the silent, they criticize the talkative. There is no one who escapes criticism. Again, blocks are inevitable, frustration is inevitable. The opportunities to learn, to be rational, to move beyond that and then into the intuitive. All right, so I want to move into the intuitive through the concept of original fire. Now I want to say this original fire existed. It's the light, it's that wonderful light that HPB talks about. The alaya, is that the word? Yeah, that is within us. It's and we catch it from one another. It fans into flame. We fan into flame with our fires, the fire in each person, and it's personal to each of us. The inspirations we come from. So this is Virginia Mary Barta. She was the person who lured me into the Franciscan community. She was a dear friend of Dora Kunz, a dear friend of her. And once I was able to take tea with the two of them, oh my God, my mouth was on the floor, huh? So here, this fire that we have to tend to it, the only way to tend that fire is in a contemplative being. So how do I, in a way, move back into that? A meditation on the person who first inspired me. Allow that to catch flame in me, leaning back into that marvelous light that connects me to them. And then, of course, you go till the soil and get into the mud and muck and the compost, if you catch my drift. All right, so now I want to quote Margaret Wheatley. We create our own worlds by what we choose to notice. And choosing to notice is driven by habit, creating a world of distinctions that make sense to us. Okay, so we want to make sense of the world, so we choose things to notice. We see the world through the self we have created. All right, now, if I insisted on seeing myself through the eyes of a Roman Catholic nun, I would not be here. That makes sense? Right, I'd be in church by now. Anyway. But here's the thing. If you continue to recreate the world you've made, nothing changes until there's a crisis and it must change because what you keep creating is no longer sustainable. See, life is very good that way, very gracious. There is nothing that has long-term sustainability in terms of our habits. And then, of course, we only connect with that which reinforces our reality. So then life, free to create itself, I mean, has all these possibilities, actually then moves into the forms we decide. And then over time, these boundaries limit our self-expression. So let me say this, as our community diminished, when I joined the community, there were 300 Wheaton Franciscans, 300 plus. We are now 58. We can no longer think of ourselves as a community of 335-year-olds. And what's possible for that? Huh? We now are, you know, this many of a particular time in life. So now what does that mean? What time is it for us? We limit our choices. We reference what we've done in the past, and we shape the future through the past, not allowing the future to lure us. That makes sense? This is huge. Huge. And I want to ask you, like, so for example, my father was real big on this. In this house, this is how it is. In this family, this is how it is. Have you ever heard that? Yeah. Okay. In this community, as a theosophist, you see, as a Catholic, as a Presbyterian, as a Jew, do you see? See, this is where the issues begin to arise. No imagination is allowed in. No intuition is allowed to break through. So here's the gift. The gift is the capacity, and we all have it. This is our original goodness. Seeing the potential not yet manifest. This is the divine at the cusp of creation, right? Not yet manifest, preparing to manifest. Seeing if this divinity is at our essence, this is what we do. So we have this lure, this intuition, this invitation, a calling from the future based on the signs of the times. So as mostly women in our mid-70s, we have a different lure from the future as Wheaton Franciscans than we had 30 years ago. All right, now, I love those eyes. See those eyes? Trusting personal inner authority based on deep faith and a spacious, love that word spacious, I will hollow you out, a spacious capacity for contemplative seeing that goes beyond existing structures or categories. Can we dare to ask the question, if we don't do this, what can we do? Huh? Now imagine sitting around having that conversation. And those are dangerous conversations in communities with long histories. I won't go there. All right, so what is the new way to the new way? You see this little girl, that's me. This is Gabi on her way to America. She had no idea what would unfold in America. Absolutely none. That I'd be here on a podium at the Theosophical Society, never in my imagination, huh? I want to say that is what we are traveling towards as you sit here in this room. We have not a clue what will become of us. And if we have a clue, it's probably not going to happen. Do you have a sense of this? So if we fix the future, we limit the divine potential. That's what this is about. About knowing that we walk into the future unknown, and everything we have heretofore habituated to will not hold. Will not hold. So let me give you this example. My father was a German soldier in the Second World War. He was a member of the SS. He was one of the first groups captured by the Russians, and he was on the Russian front. He made his way back from the Russian front, hearing the rumors about the war being lost and Hitler losing power. And he convinced himself Hitler was Germany's savior. That's how he made it back to Germany. And when he got to Germany, the war was over, and Hitler had indeed lost. The suffering. And then the suffering in my own family, we lived on a block with a temple on the corner, and Saturday mornings as people went to temple, we were sent out to sweep the stairs. This is about fixing the future. This is about knowing what you should do. This is about not understanding that there's a different possibility. So what to notice when facilitating shift. How are you doing, by the way? Are you with me still? Yeah. Okay. Now notice, please make sure the F stays in there. Facilitating shift. So I want to say I'm going to offer you some slides about energetics, energies that are afoot. When these energies are afoot, think of them not as problems but as annunciations of imminent transformation. Right? Do you see what I'm saying here? Okay. Here we go. This is, again, my community. We sit in these little circles, and we try to talk about the future. What we're talking about is the tip of the iceberg. Can you see it? I mean, and we think we're so smart. Wendell Berry is great. By expenditure of hope, intelligence, and work, you think you have it fixed. It is unfixed by rule. Within darkness, all is being changed, and you also will be changed. Apocalypse. Revelation. So all of life is in motion, right? And so what happens? We try to control. That's the habit. We tend to see difficulties as justifying more control. Sisyphus pushing up the hill harder. And of course then resistance to change is contrary to life, but resistance is our modus operandi. Of course, I love this squirrel. Have you ever watched a squirrel try to get at food? Yeah. All right, now more symptoms, enunciations are imminent. Tell me what to do so all will be back in order. Have you ever said that? Let's just do what we've always done. It'll all be okay. Why try something new? The old has always worked. And if something is changing, it must be doing something wrong. Right? So rather than say that these are problems, when you begin to hear the mental habit of these phrases arising, understand that you're on the cusp of transformation. Right? That's the important thing here. Okay. So, and particularly in a group, there are these powerful energies also that demonstrate transformation in a group. They shape our participation. Positive energies bring cohesion. Negative energies split and hurt. I come from a Catholic community. We do, and a Catholic religious community where humility was a virtue. Humility becomes a vice in this way. Don't be so full of yourself. Who do you think you are? Do you hear it? That's the cutting edge of the virtue of humility. And the inability to affirm and the always looking for what could be improved, continuous improvement, that brings it. I have seen more communities break apart because they were unable to affirm each other. And they were unable to see the gift that they were to each other as they were good enough. How can we believe we're as good as we really, really are? Do you see? What was also in the personal is now in the collective as well. Now, these energies arise, and they positive energies rise, and negative energies rise, and they ebb and flow in a situation like, look at those faces. Have you seen them before? Of course you have. And then, of course... these faces, the importance of taking care of yourself in a collective situation. And as we serve, we are always in these collective situations. One of the things about being, when you stop to be, it comes to you. It comes to you what you can offer and what you need. It comes to you rather than what you think you should be doing. It comes to you what you really need and what you can really offer. And then you can have that dance between. Now, I want to offer you some physical symptoms that herald a kind of transformative threshold. When disruption and disturbance appears, these are physical symptoms. Your headaches, you want to eat chocolate, or please, I can't stomach any more food, hear it? I'm tired, I'm restless, that knee keeps bouncing, and my breathing changes. Now, these are physical symptoms. Negative energies are afoot. That's all it means. Then there are mental symptoms when this negative energy is afoot. Let's just get the job done. Now, there's nothing like a theosophist to bring this out. I know because we do similar things. We call them community chapters and federation meetings. And then impatience. Now, here's the thing. Impatience isn't a character flaw. It's a mental symptom that there's negativity in the room. Do you see that? It's negative in the collective. That when there's confusion and loss of focus, most likely it is, and you're in a high-stress situation, most likely it's not a personality flaw. It is a response to the negative energy in the room. And if you find yourself daydreaming or your mind is chattering, again, too, these are symptoms that you'd rather not hear the possibility of transformation being asked of you in this moment. Now, emotional symptoms, too. Look at this. Don't you love this turtle? When you have huge reactions, oh, she is so great, or oh, my God, here she comes again. When you have that kind of symptomatology, you are being invited to transformation in that relationship. Even a positive, huge response. Beware. Beware. Pay attention. What's this about? Look underneath. You project the projection onto individuals. It's always her fault. Now, being one of the younger members of the community, I got a lot of this projection, you know? What does she know? Let me tell you, years of therapy later, I can laugh. Or when you feel like you want, do I have to go into that room? Oh my God, do I have to go into that room? What that's telling you is that the habits you have cultivated so far now will not work for you. Something new is being invited to break through. And of course, defensiveness is a response as well. Now I love this, as a leader, the five of us on the council would look at each other, we were so burdened. Oh my God, we felt all this responsibility till we got over it. And then the sense, if you find yourself overly negative or overly critiquing, again, this is a clue that your habits aren't working for you. New possibilities are afoot. Now, I want to also say there are spiritual symptoms to this. So not just mental or physical or emotional. There are also spiritual symptoms. When you feel alone, it is an invitation to change and transformation. When you feel the loss of your connection to the center, when you feel cut off from inspiration and intuition, this is Hopkins just before a bath. And there is nothing to do but just hang down your head and endure it, huh? Now, but this, let me say, this is a reframing of what we have called the dark night of the soul, yes? And when we say dark night of the soul, all of you nod, yes, transformation. But boy, when you feel this, you don't want to know that, right? You don't want to know that. Because moving through the other side of the dark night means that everything that heretofore had worked for you will not work now. See that? Okay, that's the reality of it. So what helps? What helps? If all of this is splitting, then the homeopathic remedy is flexing the muscle of connection. You know, so flexing, I am connected to these people. So invoking the rationality of, I am a vowed member of this community. How can I be alone? You see? Invoking the rationality and then allowing the intuition to break through, doing my inner work around parental issues or authority issues or God knows what issues. And there is nothing like a ritual or a ceremony. So I have stopped meetings, rung a bell, stopped meetings, and invited everyone to light a candle. And slowly each person extinguishes the candle. To make up a ritual on the spot, to sing a little dance in the Franciscan tradition, to chant, to do ceremony. Why? Because ceremony is the fundamental way of connecting. And then, of course, whenever I feel any of the symptoms before, I said, Gabe, what about your practice? Did you sit this morning? And how long did you sit? And what was that like, really? So the examine of conscience around our practice. Oops. And then I love this picture. I just love this picture. Okay. This is very counterintuitive to the rational mind, but I'm going to offer this because this is how true intuition, that next level of insight, breaks through. If you have the courage to lean into the tension, to slow down, to feel the tension, to be present to the tension, to invite the person you're in tension with to be present with you and to hold it together, something changes. Notice here, deliberately, consciously choosing a wholeness perspective. Typically, we'd like to break the tension. If we can stay with the tension long enough, it opens up into the next possibility. So, of course, I say this so lightly, but let me tell you, there are heartaches, at least 100,000 heartaches behind this. Honor and attend to the differences of each one's perspective of wholeness. Everyone has a different insight for what wholeness for us means. Yes? And so then when you are in this family, wholeness, what does wholeness for the family mean? Is it Gabe's wholeness? Is it my father's wholeness? Do you see where I'm going with this? So together, you discover what wholeness means in this community. So we're in this organic service. And I cannot emphasize these two words enough. Allowing and trusting. Because the first habit of mind is to order. How can I let chaos happen? Order it. And I come from a religious order with a habit. Do you hear that? All right, so it's all about trusting the chaos. So here it is, to honor this transformative process. This is where we require the intuition that Vic was speaking about, listening for the new. It's not logical. Asking deep and frightening life questions. You cannot ask deep and frightening questions in a rational way. It is impossible. It's the next bump up. And of course, then this means allowing to die what no longer carries energy and grieving wholeheartedly until the grief goes away to the new. Let me bring this to flesh and bone. We most likely have maybe two more councils left in our community. That is to say, we have enough women who are capable to do the administrative leadership of our community. So we have maybe two more. So maybe we have another 12 years out. And then it's over. It's over. Something else has to happen. We cannot sustain the leadership that we have or the model of leadership that we have. And that is very painful. Now we have older sisters who will never see younger ones replace them. Okay, see, so grieving that, and order, of course, order, that, and the fear will say, get over it already. You're spiritual, get over it. See, there's something about the intuitive correctness of grieving wholeheartedly. And it's in that grief, when we can love in that grief, it is the love of the crucified, it is the divine experience that will be available to us. Coming to the end of the path as we know it. Realizing everything changes. Here we are, even the Theosophical Society, even my Franciscan community, even, oh my God, we have a Pope named Saint Francis. So there it is. Everything changes. Just when the caterpillar thought its world was over, it was, and it became a butterfly. The caterpillar hadn't a clue. When a caterpillar metamorphosizes, it becomes a slurry of cells in the chrysalis. It literally dissolves, and the cells reconstitute through what is called instar, or the imaginal cell in the butterfly that allow it to take shape as a butterfly. So just to get a sense of this amazing process, this is the most powerful metaphor of what is asked for us when we confront ourselves, when we die before we die. And this amazing creature, dying before we die. And we cannot predict how we shall be dying before we die. Do you see that? It's this deep, mysterious, profound place that we are never fully prepared for. And so I want to say, too, just to know the map, I want to offer you, this is the map for individual evolution, and it's the map for community evolution, and it's my way of saying what Vic was saying, inspiration, innovation, rapid growth in your experimentation, stabilization and maintenance. This is the part we love. Let's get there. We love that part. Maintain. Finally maintain my weight. Thank God. You know, let's keep it. Then inevitable changes. It happens. No one to blame. And then there's a period of dormancy. By dormancy, I mean this. Don't know what to do. No roadmap. Don't know what to do. Don't know what to do. This is when a community and when I am called to be. To be. And then there comes the inspired, intuitive reemergence. So what holds us through all of this? I love this poem. There is a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder what you are pursuing. You explain about the thread, but it's hard for others to see. While you hold the thread, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You just don't ever let go of the thread. So the thread for me is this amazing love that happens in the midst of suffering, and it elevates suffering. It elevates and transcends and changes from what heretofore was bitter to an intense sweetness that changes my life. following the thread. So here it is, don't force. So leaders, take note. If you find yourself in any kind of influential position, take note, here it is. Don't force, encourage, and invite. Consider possibilities. Observe the present. Notice what gives energy. Follow the energy, even if you don't like where it's going. Trust the principle of ease, the simplest, most direct way. And then, of course, you know this too. This is just a little review. Little review, live in the present, slow down. Again, this is my way of saying what both Vic and Cynthia said. Question deeply why and how. Let service bring us joy. Let courage come from our hearts. Choose peace of mind. Notice I say choose peace of mind. Mm-hmm. So here I offer you this amazing cartoon. This is a cartoon by Sandra Schneiders. Sandra Schneiders is an amazing theologian and tracker of the movement of religious life in the church. And she actually looks like that. And of course, you may not know this, but Catholic religious women are currently under scrutiny by Rome. That may change in the next few years, but nonetheless, we're very suspicious to them. Why? Because we don't look like we're supposed to. And literally, we've never looked like this before. Do you see the metaphor? Nuns have never looked like this before. We are making it up as we go along. That's what it's like when transformation happens. You make it up as you go along, using your best intuition and relying deeply on your faith and practice. And of course, Albert Einstein says, imagination is greater than knowledge. Knowing the next step on the path, huh? Imagining. It's not, and I want to say, it's not knowing it, it's imagining it and trying it and trying it. We make the road by walking. This is the organic way. We are not... The nature is not a clock. It's not a machine. It really is this amazing organic planet. And for us to be community with the planet, we too must become this amazing organic process. So now I want to play an anthem for you. And this anthem is about hope. The way we take the next step is by profound, profound affirmation of hope. And so I have some slides and some music, this anthem of hope. And if you want to, sing along as you catch the melody and the words. I want to say thank you, and I want to say it in this way. Thank you for, without any extraordinary power, against all odds, day by day, reconstituting the world. Thank you.